This is The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests. A guest today to help you lead a more positively minded life. And Benjamin Starr in the studio, of course.
Thank you, Julian. Thank you.
Myself, Julian Joiello, and we have licensed mental health counselor, Alan White.
Hello, everybody.
From our very own DeMille Center.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
So today we're talking about something that's been on the rise for quite a while in America and all over the world.
So are you paying attention?
Yeah, are you paying attention right now?
This is important.
If you're listening to the radio and driving, that's a multitasking. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to the radio and you're cooking and you're writing a letter and you're watching TV, that's a lot of multitasking. And it sort of relates to what we're talking about today, which is ADHD.
ADHD.
And we've got this very, very talented professional here in the studio to talk to us about it.
Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder.
Right, ADHD. So let's start off by just saying, what is ADHD?
Well, the term itself is something that comes out of the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual, the DSM. And it's been in so many different forms, this DSM. So the latest one is DSM-5. And it's lingo that the psychological science world puts together to tell to each other when it comes to billing, when it comes to diagnosis. Everybody wants
very technical, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a statistics manual. So we get those terms out of that. It's kind of like the psychology Bible. So everybody knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, we've got one here, I think.
Yeah. So how can we break down that technical psychological manual into radio-friendly terms?
Right. It's simply the inability to pay attention and stay on task with one or more focus, to have a focus. If you're able to, say if you're able to sit in a quiet room and focus on one thing, then your attention is not scattered and it's not uncomfortable for you. The thing that makes it a disorder is when it interrupts, when your inability to pay attention to one or two things interrupts your daily living activities. That is the only reason why it would be a disorder. If you experience the symptoms that come under something called attention deficit disorder, but you are not being disrupted in your daily living and you can function and you can be successful with these symptoms, then it is not literally a disorder.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? I wasn't paying attention. No, I'm just kidding.
Stay on task, Ben.
Yeah, so, we're going to stay on task.
So ADHD is more of a nurture-based disorder rather than nature-like. So are people often born with it? It seems that it kind of grows from the environment that you're raised in.
So this is a question that's been kicked around, I think, as long as there's been psychology.
Right.
The
right?
Nature versus nurture
nature
debate.
Nature versus right. nurture. And there are some physical diagnostic tools that have been introduced to see what can be done about ADHD or how it can be detected. So there are brain scans that are being used, but there are concerns about those brain scans. But what they have seen is that certain areas of the brain will light up, or they will be shown to be affected when the subject is trying to stay on task, or is trying to take care of some. So there's a physical link, and I think more that's in its infancy. That's scanning. It's not been verified as the go-to way to tell if a person has ADHD, and there are still the same concerns for a young brain being exposed to the radiation to get one of those scans, as well as there's the same concern about giving a young brain Ritalin, for instance, or those things that have been introduced to try to treat it. So that's always been a concern. But it's a matter of the symptoms, and the more common way to diagnose it has been to interview people in the child's
life.
And
it seems, it seems to come out also very much in children. It says the average age of ADHD diagnoses are 7 years old.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's the average. Meaning there's below that that yeah. it starts even. And also a strange fact that children living in households where English is the main language are four times as likely to be diagnosed as children living in households where English is the second language.
That's interesting.
I wonder if that's just has to do with English speaking cultures. And the way they work, or if it's actually the languages, or maybe speaking two languages helps you focus somehow. But there's obviously a strange strange correlation, four times as likely.
Hmm.
So if I understand correctly, Alan, there's no one test that can tell you whether someone has ADHD.
There's nothing we could do right on the radio right now, because that would be so nice.
Right? And yeah,
like, look down at your hands.
It would be revolutionary, in fact.
But you know, you're a mental health professional, so how do you go about diagnosing ADHD in an individual? I mean, mm-hmm. what do you look for?
Well, I listen to a person that's presenting themselves for whatever they come for. They'll have a set of challenges that they want to address, behaviors that they want to try to modify. And I listen to what they have to tell me and what they think about themselves. And if it correlates with what I know to be symptoms of ADHD, then I present it back to them. Do you think this might be a thing that you're experiencing? Do you think that this applies to you? What I never do is I never open up the DSM and just read the symptoms.
Sure. But give us some examples.
Well, it would be a racing mind and having racing thoughts. I've heard that very often, that just in a still place when a person who feels that they have ADHD is trying to just be still with their thoughts and themselves, they'll have a lot of different ideas going on and a lot of different, you could almost say voices, but it's not that concrete as voices. It's just a lot of different ideations going on at the same time, and not an ability to single one out and say, this is what I'm thinking right now. It's generally a lot of thoughts going on at the same time.
Well, just the language of pay attention, right? And the use of the word pay.
Mm.
It's like our attention is our mental wealth, and there's only so much of it.
Right, you've got a little bit of a currency, and it's a limited amount.
Yeah.
And that's when you know you're really broke. You cannot pay attention.
And so I've been reading a little bit from Healthline.com, where I've been bringing this up. And it's also saying that boys and girls display different ADHD symptoms. So boys' symptoms usually seem to be more obvious and external. It says impulsivity or acting out, hyperactivity such as running and hitting, lack of focus, including inattentiveness, and physical aggression. While then for girls, they seem to be, on average, less obvious and more internal, being withdrawn, low self-esteem and anxiety, intellectual impairment and difficulty with academic achievement, inattentiveness or a tendency to daydream, and verbal aggression, teasing, taunting, or name-calling.
That's in girls.
Right. So there's a lot of, like, cultural things that I'm noticing about ADHD. It comes, I feel like, from a much more cultural place that's not as cemented in the genes, it seems.
Yeah.
It's much more of the experiences that happen, the gender, the languages you're speaking.
Mm-hmm.
These are all things that kind of affect how ADHD it becomes more and more prevalent.
Seems to manifest. But I can never ignore the fact that we have different expectations for boys
sure.
than we do for girls.
No, absolutely.
And so
right.
maybe that the children feel constrained to behave in certain ways
right.
or are given
when
more
they
permission.
Might not naturally feel that way.
Yeah. Like I'm sure girls have the desire to haul off and belt someone,
mm-hmm.
but is it ladylike?
Right, is it ladylike? And then that comes back to the culture,
to
right? Like maybe, I mean, I don't think that's normal really anywhere, but but there's other, you know, other things that could be normal in a certain culture for a woman to do and then not in another, and then that could be a reason why
yeah.
ADHD would be more prevalent in
yeah.
the latter.
And it would be amazing if we just took the strictures off and have and take away the gender expectations
right.
and the privilege that males seem to have to be able to act out that aggression and the repression of women that they cannot.
Right.
All that factors in, but if it becomes a disorder, it depends, that's when it's cultural, right? If the structure around the individuals tell them
mm-hmm.
you must behave this way
right.
and their own internal experience leads them to behave a different way, they might not be successful, then it becomes a disorder.
Right, right.
Julian, I think you make a great point about ADHD and the cultural connotations of ADHD. There's a graph, a chart released by the American Psychiatric Association showing the prevalence of ADHD across different countries of the world and different regions of the United States. And it fluctuates and, you know, really widely. For example, in New York City, it's almost off the charts compared to anywhere else. It's almost 15% of the population. And then, you know, when I look at Pittsburgh here, it's less than 5%. So I think region may play a role. It goes back to we were talking about nature versus nurture.
Right.
Maybe that in this case, nurture plays a large role.
It may do. Because how many tasks are demanded of people in a place this concentrated as opposed to another city that's more spread out?
Of course.
And the metropolis that they're surrounded by doesn't put as many demands on.
Now, there's some strange outliers on this chart here. In the Ukraine, they're showing an over 20% prevalence. And, you know, that seems like a quite high number, one in five. And in some other European countries, for example, Spain shows less than 10%. Ireland shows less than 2%.
Hmm.
The Netherlands shows just over 1%. So it is cultural, I think.
Okay.
But it could also be, I mean, who knows? Could this be just a over or under diagnosing in certain places?
Oh, yeah.
It could be that maybe in New York City, children are much more quickly whisked off to see a mental health professional.
Yes.
Right, yeah. I mean, and perhaps the drugs that are, given to somebody who is diagnosed could be lobbied for in some places. Often America tends to be the
place. Until very recently, the big pharmaceutical companies would have these reps that would go out and give gifts and take doctors out. And they recently made laws to change that. But, you know, doctors would have these reps show up at their office with great tickets to Broadway and baseball games.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we can't ignore any of that. Yeah, yeah. Those are huge factors, aren't they?
Yeah.
That there's a profit to be made in psychology and in pharmaceuticals. And so if there can be an emphasis put on getting their product into your hands, there's a good chance that they'll make a study, they'll take a poll, the numbers will reflect the need for it.
Well, what are the alternatives, Alan? I mean, besides medicating, how do people deal with this situation?
This is my first principle of therapy, and that is to learn about yourself and then learn to accept what you find out so that there's a lot less disapproval of ourselves as individuals. That will help approach any change you want to make. If you learn what about yourself is okay and acceptable, then what else do you want to change? But a lot of times I find that people that come to me have come with under a load of shame and disapproval, and the things that they want to change have been imposed a lot of times.
Would you call ADHD a mental illness?
It kind of lies in a neutral place, doesn't it? The definition of mental illness itself, by the literal term of mental illness, I would say yes, but the stigma of the words mental illness.
Right. And you're just talking just now about the shame associated with this. But
yeah.
I'm wondering, you know, is ADHD a mental illness? I don't know.
If it's not the very second thing, one of the huge emphasis I put out there is not to find or label something normal right away, because there are so many different variations of human beings across this entire planet that whatever one person might call normal is very easily dismissed. So to say something is a mental illness is to say that it deviates from the norm. And I need to know, okay, but what is normal? So that if I'm going to judge myself as having a mental illness, am I doing it fairly? Am I being correct, or am I judging myself on something that I don't need to carry?
Right, and also what's normal for the person, right? What do they want? in their lives. Yes. I feel like that's a really important part too.
Right. And it goes back to the term disorder. Mm-hmm. If it does something that takes you out of functioning, you may be functioning at a very high level and you have something that is called a disorder. But if you're being successful in what you're aiming at, like in the arts, you can have – there's so many artists that have ADHD and they have been diagnosed and they say and they put out as public information, I have ADHD, and yet they are successful in what they do. So the D part of the ADHD is not applicable. They do not have a disorder because they're functioning and being successful in what they're doing.
It's an excellent point. You're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Julian Joiello. Our guest in the studio today is Alan White, who's an expert. Well, he's a therapist here at the DeMille Center, but he specializes in ADHD in both children and adults, and especially among creative types.
Definitely.
And you just started to tell us about the ADD with artists, mm-hmm. but they don't have the D part, right? The disorder, because yeah. they're successful.
I'd love to give a quick list of some famous people with ADHD. Walt Disney, Michael Phelps, the decorated Olympian swimmer.
One of the greatest Olympic athletes ever.
Justin Timberlake. We all know Justin Timberlake, singer, actor. Michael Jordan, Jim Carrey. That one makes sense to me.
Yeah, Jim Carrey, I could see.
David Neilman, aviation entrepreneur. I don't know David Neilman.
I'm not familiar.
Will Smith, John F. Kennedy, Richard Branson, and Albert Einstein.
There you go.
There was just like, there. Okay, let's see a list of 10 most famous. those are some famous people. I don't know the Neilman guy, but everybody else. I mean, very talented people who kind of have the jack-of-all-trades thing going on for them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about Justin Timberlake being he's a singer, a dancer, but he's also a businessman, and he's also an actor, and he's also doing all these kinds of things, and his focus is broad, mm-hmm. but it's not failing in the efforts that he's putting in. He's doing very well, mm-hmm. Obviously. I mean, we all know the name Justin Timberlake, yeah. and it's very interesting when we think of it this way.
Yeah, Michael Jordan is probably the biggest name to me on that list. I mean, not just one of the great basketball players, but one of the great athletes
yeah.
ever. And it's interesting. But the creative aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that to play sports, there is a creative side that helps people become successful in sports. But when we're talking about art and artists, musicians, how is ADD, I mean, I'm sure it can be an asset. It doesn't have to be this disorder, as we say.
Well, I can tell you that just to consider a piano player and their ability to use both hands practically independently, from what I can see, because I do not play a piano, I can't fathom how that happens. Black keys, white keys, and foot pedals.
Right, yeah. And then, or you watch a drummer. Same thing. They've got two foot pedals, sometimes three. They're going back and forth. They've got both their hands playing all these different drums, and they have to hear all the music on the stage, stay in tune with it, or sometimes go against it.
Mm.
And it's just so much happening. I mean, it's funny we're talking about this. Have you ever seen those guys on the subway that are the one-man band?
Oh, yeah.
And he's got like a tambourine on his foot,
yep.
and he's got a banjo.
See
and he's
that
got
guy
a harmonica
in Times
in his
Square
mouth.
Station.
He's got like a maraca on his head,
mm-hmm.
and he's whistling and harmonica-izing and singing.
And he's got little tiny cymbals on his eyelids.
Right, yeah. And when he sneezes, it plays a chord. Yeah, but I mean, it's amazing. And that guy, I mean, he's mastered the multitasking because he's making music with that. He's not just insanity. I mean, it is a little bit of insanity, but, you know,
it's organized chaos.
It is, and that works for him.
And so when you were, the fact that it's diagnosed early in childhood, doesn't that tell us that the structure of the learning environment has always needed to be examined? Because I know that there are different modes now of education that caters to more learning styles.
Right.
But isn't it a classroom teacher wants to keep order in their classroom. So if they have a child who they label disruptive, they get that child tested for ADHD to find out, oh, this child has a disorder.
It's very convenient, isn't it?
They're not being able to succeed in my environment. So they have ADHD, a disorder. But what if it isn't a disorder, what if it is a different learning style, a different way of perceiving the world, and being able to juggle a lot of things at the same time, therefore needing a little extra stimulation, and just sitting and listening to one person speak for 45 minutes is not conducive to that child.
Right. So, well, as opposed to that, the sort of traditional rote learning environment, how do you think, what do you think a kid with ADHD needs to flourish in a learning environment?
Clearly more stimulation.
Okay. More hands-on,
yeah, more
participation.
More sources of stimulation, more sources of information, more sensory input, more, so not just words, but also sensory experiences, a sound,
for example,
a touch. It could be music, as it could be performance art. It could be experiential performance art, hands-on things, art classes, art participation, not just lecture, not just book learning, and just read and then regurgitate what you've read and show that you know the information by answering certain questions. It may be a spoken essay as opposed to just a writing essay.
So from everything you're saying, I imagine that college must be tremendously challenging for people with ADHD.
I'd like to believe that college is a more advanced form of teaching. But if it is a lecture hall for an hour and a half, yeah.
Because it often is. And it often is learning answers to be able to regurgitate them on a test.
I mean, I remember when I was in lecture halls and I was in college, and I would sit there and everybody's got laptops.
Yeah.
So that's already game over.
game over.
Multitasking right away.
You're on Facebook. Everybody's
a couple dozen different screens.
I see people playing video games.
Yeah.
I'm like, get out of here. We're in school
Far Cry right now.
Yeah, I'm going to play some Far Cry. Play some Grand Theft Auto. I'm going to play this right now in the middle of my lecture. And somehow expect to do well in this test. And it's like, I mean, maybe they have ADD, or maybe it's, you know, just the laptop sort of being there is like, how can you ignore this bright moving screen full of possibilities? I mean, I can't imagine.
But I can tell you that I would expect someone with ADHD to be able to play Far Cry and hear the lecture and do well.
Right. I mean, sometimes I have my laptop out and I'll be taking notes and I'll be like talking to somebody else, but I'm still taking notes and I'm there. I'm listening.
Well, do you think, Alan,
it's possible.
Are we in a culture that fosters or even allows ADD to flourish? Is it because I think we're in a culture right now that's a lot about instant gratification, about endless options in all kinds of facets of life. And it's very fast-paced. And I wonder if that is something that encourages ADHD or leads to people exhibiting ADHD more than maybe before.
Well, I have a question to return to that possibility, and that is, are the people that are presenting our media, are they better suited for ADHD? Are they able to multitask, and therefore the programming that they design caters more to an ADHD predisposition with short attention spans and short bursts of information that happen simultaneously? Maybe because that's an environment that they've been able to thrive in, and so that just is a reflection of who they are. And that's been giving back to us as a society.
Well, that's a great question, and I'm going to sound like an old-timer here.
Back in my day!
Yeah, back in my day, MTV, music television, used to play music videos.
Yes, I
remember
them
well. And it used to be
content
and programming related to music. Now, MTV is a channel that shows TV shows that often have very little to do with music, and the production style is such that there is basically a cut every 3 or 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it moves very fast. It's a lot of bright colors, a lot of quick cuts. And I wonder, you know, is this being produced by people with ADHD or for people with ADHD? Mm. It's like you say, the media is a big part of that, and the soundbite culture that we live in.
Yeah, and if you watch, if anybody knows what Vine is,
yes.
Vine is a 6-second video application. So you've got Instagram, which is for photos. You could swipe through 400 photos in 5 minutes. You've got Vine, which is just watch these little tiny, fast-cutting I mean, usually there's like 7 or 8 cuts in a 6 second.
Because a 90 video. Second YouTube video is way too long. I don't have time for that.
Right.
And I need a 6 second Vine video.
And along
video.
With that, I mean, I think a big thing to consider too is a lot more advertisements are being seen as in our generation when you have such a high prevalence of media, both computers, cell phones. To have something for free, often you get an advertisement on it. And from 2,000 ads a day about 30 years ago in New York, you see 5,000 now a day.
So
as an average person, you see 5,000 ads just in passing, you know, walking around the city.
So the shorter the attention span or the shorter the presentation of information, then the more advertisements you can sandwich in between those presentations.
And the crazy part is you can say, okay, so do you recognize this ad? Yes. Do you know that? Do you know what's Just Do It? Oh, okay, Nike. Okay, yeah, I know these. And this is information. We're not just seeing it and forgetting it. We're actually retaining this information, which I'm sure contributes to some kind of, I mean, your brain's all of a sudden full of all these ads.
Now, what if...
Flying around with colors and stimulation.
And logos and mascots.
And logos and mascots.
So imagine if our brains are just capable of operating at these speeds, and it's being developed more now. But it's being called ADHD, and it's been given a stigma.
Right. So, what if this is actually a talent?
Yeah. Well, in the more successful people, it's clearly a talent.
It is. It's obviously possible to utilize ADHD in a great way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I found myself, with focus problems, but I also am a great multitasker. I mean, it works very well when I'm engineering on the show. Mm. It works very well. When I'm playing music, guitar, and producing, anything like this, all this sort of stuff, I really find value in being able to multitask. I was saying before that I used to have 2 screens on my computer, and you could drag things from each screen to the other on my desktop computer. And I could watch a YouTube video, I could write an essay, I could listen to music, I could... text a friend, I could send an email, edit a photo, and this was all on my computer. And it was intense. It was an intense experience. When I went on my computer, it was tiring because my brain was working so much because I was working on some homework and I was watching a video. But in fact, like, I found myself getting a lot done in that time. Mm. But I eventually said, okay, I need to slow down a little bit because this is getting stressful, and I removed one of my screens so that I just had one. Because whatever I can fit on my screen, I think, is exactly how much I should be doing. But yeah, I mean, that was interesting. And I can imagine multiple screens everywhere just kind of surrounding you would definitely contribute to multitasking abilities or multitasking tendencies.
Well, think about the screens that we're exposed to now. I mean, just about everybody has a cell phone. You know, many, many people have a television in their homes. A lot of people go to work and use a computer at work. They go home and they have a home computer. Some people have, you know, screens in their cars with navigation and all that. I mean, there's screens everywhere nowadays. And let me reemphasize for our listeners, Julian was just talking about his multitasking. And it works very well when he's engineering this show. Mm. I wish you guys could see him. He's like a wizard at the controls. One of these days, we got to see if we can simulcast The Positive Mind on like public access television with cameras.
I would love to put this
That'd
on YouTube,
fun.
Just like live.
It'd be
cast.
A lot of fun.
We can make some cool faces like, hey, we're talking right now. Look at us.
I've seen it done. It's possible.
Well, you know, they do it for like the big time radio shows on big time TV networks. But we would just try to get on public access.
Yeah.
Which would be nice.
Yeah, actually, what we're talking about, by the way, today is ADHD. We have licensed mental health counselor Alan White in the studio with us. I mean, his full name's just Alan White.
But, it is.
But we do have that, nice license part there.
Yeah.
And Benjamin Starr here hosting with me. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Stay tuned for the next half hour as we take phone calls from people, hopefully, about their experiences. And we talk a little bit more about this subject. The telephone number is 212-757-5555. Give us a call, 212-757-5555, if you want to talk about our topic today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
John Coltrane with Giant Steps here on 99.5 FM WBAI. You're listening to The Positive Mind. And we had some correspondence from a listener who told us a little bit about what that phenomenon is when you're bombarded with advertisements.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. It's subliminal. So all of this is happening kind of without you realizing it, and it's called subconscious priming. So we just want to mention that because it's interesting. You're basically learning all of these things without you realizing it. So you don't even need to concentrate on memorizing something. Like, let's say you would sit there and study for a test. You say, okay, I'm going to study these words. To memorize them. Do I know this one? Do I know this one? Continue on. Instead, you're just sort of learning them because they're there, and you're not really spending the time. But you do, in fact, know these advertisements, and you would recognize them. And if someone asked you to recite them verbatim, you'd say, yes, just do it as Nike.
And while we were discussing that on the break, we were playing music by John Coltrane, and we got a phone call from a listener named John.
Yes.
Hello, John. You're on the air.
John, how you doing?
How are you? First of all, thank you for having this show. I have quite a few things I'd like to touch on, if I may. First of all, you're talking about environmental factors, but there's a very significant environmental factor that you haven't mentioned, which I'd like to factors that I'd like to point out.
Okay.
And I heard your guest on kind of, if I correct me if I'm wrong, kind of an acceptance of ADHD. Is this is the way it is, without which is good in a way. But there are people, there are doctors that can cure ADHD, and so I think it's good to have your listeners know that there actually are holistic doctors that have had success, and I'm sure Gary Null would know a lot about that as well. So, for example,
well, you mentioned the environmental factor, John. What would that one be? The one that we missed?
Okay, thank you for asking me. First of all, if you go to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and you look at the ingredients in vaccines, most vaccines have heavy metals also considered to be neurotoxins, such as Demerosol, which is a mercury derivative. They have aluminum, and they have other heavy metals.
So you think that the vaccines have led to ADD? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it. I know it.
Okay.
And I know that seems like a rather bold statement to make, but I've done a lot of research.
Well, send us that research. Send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. We'd love to take a look at it.
Sure. Thank you. I will do that. And there's another area where we're getting bombarded with heavy metals, which some people know about, but not too many. And that is the geoengineering, which is the long lines in the sky coming after not all jets, because it's not a not all jets do this. That's how we know that it's intentional. But scientists have studied what is released out of those planes, and they're primarily nanoparticles of aluminum, barium, and strontium. These are all heavy metals. Is it any wonder our children are having these problems with focusing? Because
John, is this something you struggle with personally? I mean, have you had a diagnosis or someone you know?
I don't have it. Someone that I know, a nephew of mine, has it. And since you mentioned it, one of you mentioned on the show, I thought a very important thing to consider, and that is the pharmaceutical industry and the psychiatric profession have a vested interest in drugging the people in this country, and particularly the children.
Well, I think there's no question about it, John. And I want to thank you for the call, but we do want to get to some other callers if we can. But
okay.
Thank you. And do send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for sharing with us, John.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. We're talking about ADHD. Our guest today, Alan White, therapist here at the DeMille Center, good friend, colleague of Armand DeMille's, and an expert in ADHD. Yeah.
What I appreciate from John was the being able to identify the fact that still, even when I'm ready to accept and I want to bring up the positive aspects, that if a person has ADHD or identifies that they have ADHD, that they are not condemning of themselves, or they're not operating under a load of shame about it, But there is a fact that having it does also complicate some parts of your life, and it's more in the interpersonal relationship aspect of your life where ADHD does cause some impairment and some problems. Because when your focus is scattered and you're not able to stay on an emotional task or able to pay attention enough to pick up signals from a significant person in your life, they may feel neglected, they may feel slighted, and that's a thing that becomes an issue between two people instead of just a learning environment or an ability to just do tests.
So there's a big socialization component.
Yeah.
Right, and it also becomes, it sort of leaves the, just affecting the person, and now it starts affecting the people around them.
Yes. Are you struggling with ADHD? If you're out there listening and it's something that you've dealt with or you've learned how to use for good.
Right, struggling or enjoying.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about that. We'd love to hear, and we'd love if you'd give us a call at 212-757-5555.
212-757-5555.
That nice, beautiful, symmetrical number. Give us a call. We're talking about ADHD and the ups and downs of it and the environmental factors of it as far as, well, we touched earlier in the first half of the program on the cultural factors of it. Julian mentioned that you're four times as likely to be diagnosed if you come from an English-speaking only
home.
Yeah,
and that's interesting. I mean, I wonder why that happens. Maybe it says if you English is your second language, it's four times less likely. So it's you know, if you speak Spanish and then you also learned English, for some reason that has a very strong effect on your ability to focus.
Yeah.
Maybe if being able to juggle two languages in your brain at the same time or make that translation, maybe that uses enough energy that it's not spent in other areas.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not. Maybe your ability to focus is honed better when you're naturalized to speak two languages.
It could also be like there are people who have posited that all of reality is actually made of language.
Mm.
And there are examples like the Inuit people have dozens of different words for snow.
Mm-hmm.
We just say snow. Mm-hmm. I mean, we might say sleet. Mm-hmm. We might say
flurries.
But we
frozen it, water.
Yeah,
falling from the sky.
The Inuit have dozens of words for it, or many words for it, because there are many examples of how language can inform our reality, and that may be a part of it. There may be something built into the English language. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you think of what language is when you reference something. You're saying tree. I'm thinking of a tree that's near my house that I grew up next to. You're thinking of a different tree. And Alan's over here thinking about palm trees.
No.
Because he's like, it's warmer than... No, I'm just kidding.
I'm thinking of a thicker tree
with
fuller leaves that are green. That's
but it's interesting. I mean, then you see, okay, there's a different mental process that's happening in each of our brains right now. And it's a different world in there. And the language is just sort of referencing that. Mm. Which is exciting. Anyways, we've got Carol on the line. Carol?
Yes, gentlemen. I wasn't listening to the program. I'm a mother of an 18-year-old daughter in college with ADHD. I just heard the word ADHD, and I said I have to call.
Mm.
So please forgive me if what I'm about to say doesn't pertain to the program.
No, it's fine.
Fine? Okay.
Yeah.
My daughter was diagnosed. I diagnosed her because I was investing so much into her. And I expected to get a flood, and I was getting a trickle. And I said, something is wrong. Something is not right, you know. And then because I'm separated from my husband, I remember, at 6 years old, I remember, I know this person. She's her dad. And also I found out that her dad has ADHD. But growing up in the Caribbean, of course, there was no care. It was a total mystery. So my daughter was in treatment very early. When I said by treatment, we did therapy, we did play therapy, we did biofeedback, we did medication, and even though she, not only does she have ADHD, but she's also dyslexic.
Mm.
But this girl, because of the treatment that she started early and all the other therapeutic interventions, she is in college on a full scholarship.
Beautiful.
That's really great to hear.
Very well. I am black. I'm from the Caribbean. I am. If the child needs the intervention and needs the medication, I think they should receive it it does help. It did help in my case. It is helping in my situation.
Right, Carol. Do Do you get feedback from her now, and does she tell you about her experience now?
Yes, she's in college. She just came for Thanksgiving.
What has been her overall rating of what you've done for her? Is she positive about it? Does she say it was a help, or does she have any misgivings? Or
no, she said, "Mom, you are my best therapist. Thank you very much. You saved my life."
Okay.
It's just that, why did you have to choose my father who has ADHD? I didn't have an interest
in
that.
I'd like to know any child who's not asking their parent, why did you have to do it this way? Why did you have to do it that way?
I don't have the answer to that. But she's so grateful, and I think in the future she will contribute. Especially in the Caribbean community, in the black community, she will contribute in a positive way. Because of her experience. It's
right.
Been very positive for us.
Right, to take some of that stigma off of it.
Absolutely.
And yes.
The shame and the stigma and the mystery of it. No,
yes.
Not in my house.
not in my house. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for sharing some of this. Bye-bye.
212-757-5555.
Of course. I mean, here we have Alan, who does, in fact, treat people with ADHD, and I'm sure there are many people leaving your office saying, this has helped me so much.
What I don't do, I don't diagnose or, I don't prescribe medications. My license is in mental health counseling. It's not as a psychiatrist. So what my interventions are is more behavioral and cognitive. So we really just pay attention to the behaviors that are coming from having ADHD and what we can consciously address and take control of. So after we've gone through an acceptance phase of learning how that we're okay, this is just the way we are, and we can do some things differently. And I have referred out to psychiatrists if my client wants to explore medication. That's perfectly fine with me.
I'm glad you brought that up. What percent, Alan, do you think, what percent of people who are living with an ADHD diagnosis are medicated? If you had to take a ballpark guess.
I have no idea. I know from my own client load, I know that I'd say maybe 75%.
Okay.
Of people let's say 50%. I'm going to think of four people. Two of those people have followed up with some psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them, they don't want to. Right now, they don't want to. So that's been more behavioral intervention and more cognitive and asserting more control in what we do, paying more attention to that.
Well, we have a caller on the line who says that she has ADHD. Okay. Victoria, thanks for giving us a call today.
Hi. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Greetings.
I just want to say that, first and foremost, I want to tell you, Dr. Benjamin Feingold's book is incredible. It's called Why Your Child is Hyperactive. And yes, it's outdated, but the diet is not. It's an incredible diet that when I'm on this diet, and I was only on it for 3 months, but I just want to give a testimony to this diet. Mm. As a child, I was on it for 3 months. Okay, this diet is so good that I went from F's, D's, and C's to A's, B's, and C's. Mm. I mean, I was having like a B average just being on it for 3 months. So imagine if I stayed on it, if my mother was able to keep me on it, because I had a sick father at that time. It was too hard to do the diet. But this diet, again, Dr. Benjamin Feingold, that book to me is like my second Bible. It really is.
Okay.
Right. And he was the guy who said that artificial flavoring.
And it's fantastic.
Victoria, he was the guy who said artificial flavors and artificial preservatives could lead to.
Yeah, let me just tell the public it's all about keeping out. And there's on page 12 or 13, it has a list of permitted and non permitted foods. But it's all about keeping out the preservatives. Salicylates, which is an acid in certain fruits and vegetables, unfortunately, like tomatoes and oranges. So, I mean, you have to sacrifice in certain ways. And number one, no food coloring. Food coloring is like poison for people with ADHD. Mm. And this diet is also good for people with autism. And I just want to say one more thing. Red dye number 40, very high cause of cancer and also a no-no for us.
Thank you for sharing
that. Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the food coloring because, you know, sodas, almost all soda has food coloring in it.
Oh, and, yeah. I was not allowed to have soda. Well, the only soda, you can have soda, but it can only be, soda's not really, you know, good for us, but as long as it's like Sprite or 7-Up with no dyes in it, you're okay.
The Uncola.
All right, Victoria, well, thank you so much for the call, and we want to get one more call.
Am I allowed to say something else?
real quick, because we want to get another caller in.
I just want to say environment is so important. Like, in my situation, I had people, make a long story short, banging on walls, floors, and ceilings. I couldn't study. It was very hard to go to work. They're banging under my bed from, you know, around my apartment, and it stopped now. But I got to say, if you just have a quiet place to be, you can pretty much accomplish anything because it's very hard for us, of course, to focus and concentrate.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing all these different solutions for all of our listeners. Mm-hmm. And thank you for sharing your own experience, Victoria.
Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you for your time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, let's see if we can get one more caller in here.
It's interesting listening to all of our callers today because everybody has their own way of going about it, and it seems to have worked for them. And I think it proves to show that ADHD is a very complex, multi-layered kind of thing. And we're saying today that it might not even really be considered a disorder in sometimes it can just be a creative boon. It can help both, you know, in a sense to help you multitask and help you achieve a lot of things due to the kind of energy and the kind of abilities that sort of come out of it. And for those who had problems with it, there are so many different ways, alternative ways to get about it. I'm sure we could read about that and talk about that forever.
No doubt. The fact that there's no one test that even psychological science says there's no one test to be able to predict or to detect the presence of ADHD shows how complex it is.
Right. It really does. It gets to this point where it's sort of like it's case by case basis for, you know, whoever comes in. It's like, do you want to be how you are right now?
Right.
Are you happy with how you are? If you are, then this is not a disorder.
That's my approach.
Right. I mean,
that's
how many people come into your office saying that they want medication for ADHD to treat it?
Generally, not right off the bat, no. If we've been in treatment for a while and they...
I mean, I know you don't prescribe it, but yeah, I mean, I'm just asking, yeah.
Yeah, no. People come in to see me because they want to work with solutions.
Strategies.
Yeah, and they want strategies and different approaches to things that they've been kind of arrested with. But if we're working away at it and working away at it and it's still becoming a focus of problem, then I offer that possibility.
Okay.
That they could consult with a psychiatrist according to what they're experiencing. Something if it's definitely behavioral and it's something that can be controlled just by choices, just by following through with actions and intentions,
right.
then I emphasize that more than I do medications. But if we're at a point where we've tried so many things and it's just not working out,
right.
Yeah, I won't rule it out myself.
Let's take one last caller for the day. Steven, you're on the line.
Good afternoon, gents. Real quick. You guys just mentioned something about the rapidity of images and videos and everything else, right?
Yeah. Here
it is that people tend to use television as a babysitter, as a substitute parent and everything else. And these children are sitting down there just seeing these images go at maybe one image every half a second, one image every second or so. And then when you go and you try to talk to them or put them in a classroom, they sit down and they're looking at this one image for 45 minutes or however long the class is. And then we expect them to pay attention. I mean, when they will look at TV, they look at the amount of images that they see in 1 minute.
Yeah, you've actually got 30 images.
Thank you.
Oh, well, you got a great point, Stephen. I can't argue with that. It's certainly is a contrast between how we entertain kids and how we educate kids. What do you think?
It's an incredible amount of stimulation, both coming from television, from cell phones, even from... he said what he needed to say.
And he's out.
and he was out. But, I mean, going off of what Stephen was saying, there's so much stimulation that's kind of growing and growing faster and faster that it makes sense that this is a quote-unquote disorder that is becoming more prevalent in our society.
Mm. Well, when you were detailing that mode of getting that information in our brains.
Right.
I was
priming,
priming. I was thinking that could be used as an educational tool.
Absolutely.
For instance, I know the preamble to the Constitution because of Schoolhouse Rock.
Right.
Oh, because right, it was given to me through music and imagery.
I wonder if kids think that's still a genius get way Schoolhouse to teach. Rock.
Yeah, I hope so, because I mean, I'm sure they don't. But unless they made an HD version that's 6 seconds long.
I don't know. Conjunction, what's your function?
What's your function? Yeah. I mean, we all know that. And you know, there's also ways, I know as an actor, memorizing, a lot of the time I'll just listen to the words said over and over and kind of let them just become natural in my brain.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of, I think, very beneficial ways for that priming. I mean, I'm just saying, well, with the subliminal priming happening in advertisements, I don't know if we necessarily want to memorize all these posters.
Yeah, like, what need is there for that? The need is for them to be able to get that real estate in our brains so we can give them our
money. And it's worth something to them.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's 1:56 p.m. today, Wednesday. And we are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. We've been talking with Alan White here at the DeMille Center, specializes in therapy with patients with ADHD and diagnosing that. And Benjamin Starr, of course, and myself, Julian Joiello. Make sure to send us an email at positivemind@wbai.org. Go to thepositivemind.com to listen to our archives, and go to wbai.org just to, you know, check out the station.
Yeah, we'll be back next week.
We'll be back next week, Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. You've listened to The Positive Mind for the last hour. Good job focusing. Good job focusing. Thank you for tuning in.
Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Gee, Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. When I started, I wasn't even a bill. I was just an idea. Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said, "You're right, there ought to be a law." Then he sat down and wrote me out and introduced me to Congress, and I became a bill. And I'll remain a bill until they decide to make me a law. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I got as far as Capitol Hill. Well, now I'm stuck in committee, and I'll sit here and wait while a few key congressmen discuss and debate whether they should let me be a law. How I hope and pray that they will. But today I am still just a bill.
Listen to those congressmen arguing. Is all that discussion and debate about you?
Yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. Most bills never even get this far. I hope they decide to report on me favorably, otherwise I may die.
Die?
Yeah, die in committee. Oh, but it looks like I'm going to live. Now I go to the House of Representatives and they vote on me.
If they vote yes, what happens?
Then I go to the Senate and the whole thing starts all over again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And if they vote for me on Capitol Hill, well, then I'm off to the White House where I'll wait in a line with a lot of other bills for the president to sign. And if he signs me, then I'll be a law. How I hope and pray that he will. But today I am still just a bill.
You mean even if the whole Congress says you should be a law, the president can still say no?
Yes, that's called a veto. If the president vetoes me, I have to go back to Congress and they vote on me again, and by that time you're so old.
By that time, it's very unlikely that...
¶¶